Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent are Captain Scott Lawrence. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
And Captain Clinton Robinson. Hi, Clinton.
Well, howdy there, KR. Thought I'd just come down from the 806 to 3rd and say howdy.
I'm going to call you Goober for the rest of the episode in tribute to George Lindsay. Thank you both for being here. I very much appreciate it now that we're here in season 6. So thank you both for coming back.
No problem.
Pleasure to be here.
All right, so we're here to talk about the 21st episode from season 6, Temporary Duty. It originally aired on February 13th, 1978. It was written by Larry Balmaggia and directed by Burt Metcalf. But before I get to the plot synopsis, I want to ask you both. Scott, I'll start with you. What are your feelings about the Winchester era now that we're here?
This is actually one of my favorite. Winchester is probably my favorite character. The transition from Frank to him was just, to me, pretty seamless. Clout and the character he brings to it, just amazing. So as many other guests this season, which I'm surprised have loved it so much, I too love the next 5 or 6 seasons here.
That's amazing. That really says something about MASH, that they can bring in a character 6 seasons in and it is your favorite character. Not a lot of shows can pull that off. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's I don't know what it is. It's just I've always loved, I don't want to say highbrow humor. You know, I'm a big Frasier fan too. Just love that kind of, you know, upper echelon stuff. I mean, I gotta say it's, I think we talked about in my last podcast, I have a big MASH collection. My most prized possession is a David Ogden Stiers original, his actual script that I own. So.
Oh, that's right.
Wow. Nice.
I do. Right. Yeah, it's my pride and joy, we'll say. So again, you would think after 5 seasons, it would hard to, yeah, have a brand new character be my favorite, but I just always enjoy every episode he's on, and just he always brings you something different. Not that Larry Linder wasn't great as Frank, but I love that character.
Oh man, Case of Fire, grab the script. You know, that's pretty amazing. didn't David Ogden Stiers guest star on Frasier too once? I feel like he did. I feel like I have that memory that he guested on the show at one point, which is like, that is like the meeting of the eggheads on that show. It's all those people. I should look that up, but I'm almost positive that he did a guest spot at some point.
I do believe so.
Yeah, I'm so excited. It's like, oh, it's like, you know, like this guy, I love this guy so much. You know, he's on a show I already watched. So that's so cool. So Clint, what about you? How do you feel about Winchester?
Now or when I initially watched MASH?
Oh, both. It sounds like there's a difference.
Well, you know, as I said when I was on the show last time, when I first came to MASH, it was all out of order, completely, you know, jumping seasons and everything else. Winchester was a little rough to take compared to Frank at first, you know, when you don't see it all in order. But now, yeah, I love the Winchester years.
Now, when you say he was tough to take, what do you mean?
It's just the fact that he was that much different from Frank, I think, because it felt like you had it's what he's meant to be, the I'm better than you character, but I couldn't get a feel for him, I guess. Like, I couldn't tell if he was meant to be played like tongue in cheek, if he was actually supposed to like really think he was completely better than literally everyone at the camp or just the people at the swamp.
Gotcha. It's so funny. I've been watching the show forever and I have it all mapped in my brain. I still think of Winchester as kind of like it is the later half of the show, but he was on the show longer than Frank. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. 6 seasons over 5. It's kind of like Kirstie Alley's run on Cheers was actually longer than Shelley Long's, but it sometimes doesn't feel like that because the, you know, when the show starts, that's where it sort of imprints on your brain. So that's great that he, kind of grew on you over time. So that's what it is. I think that's a tribute again to the writing and to the acting. And David Ogden Stiers is great. We love him. And as a fellow comic nerd, I know you were probably excited to see him as Martian Manhunter in the unsold Justice League of America pilot.
Don't tell Shag. I've never made it through that thing.
It's pretty rough. anyway, well, again, thank you both for being here. I really appreciate it. So let's get right to the episode, which I mentioned is Temporary Duty. Hawkeye and Nurse Bigelow are assigned to spend a week at the 8063rd, trading places with a surgeon and a nurse who will come to the 477th. Arriving in camp are Captain Roy Dupree and nurse Lorraine Anderson, who Winchester takes an immediate shine to. And although she seems flattered by the attention, she's more interested in seeing her old friend, Margaret. Well, Lorraine and Margaret catch up. Dupree bunks down in the swamp upon BJ's invitation. He's friendly and jovial, but his southern charm doesn't do much for Winchester. BJ is less put off until Dupree breaks the still in an attempt to improve its output. But even though he's difficult to get along with personally, he knows he shows that he's a whiz in the operating room, which impresses Colonel Potter. During OR, Winchester flirts with Lorraine, who flirts right back. Margaret is offended and loudly scolds her friend for behaving unprofessionally. Afterwards, the two friends have words over what just happened, and even though Margaret holds her ground, Lorraine refuses to apologize. Later, in the mess tent, Lorraine entertains everyone with stories from her and Margaret's wild younger days. BJ, Winchester, and even Father Mulcahy want to hear more, but Margaret is so humorless, she walks out. Meanwhile, Dupree is having a great time at the 477th. He even enjoys the food. He tells BJ some of his ideas for decorating the swamp, shrunken heads, and how he's angling, via Colonel Potter, to be transferred to the 477th permanently. Potter, who likes Dupree's down-home charm, promises to see what he can do. This terrifies BJ and Winchester, so when Dupree comes back to the swamp late at night, totally drunk, they tell him about Sophie, the camp mascot, knowing an old cowboy like him wouldn't be able to resist taking a ride on a horse. Meanwhile, Margaret and Lorraine have a heart-to-heart talk, where Margaret admits she's been so jealous of her friend for so long that she's almost come to hate her. Because while Lorraine is a top-flight nurse, she's still the same fun, carefree person she was when she was younger. Margaret feels trapped by her identity as Major Houlihan and admits she has no friends at the 477th. Lorraine urges her to let her guard down a little and try to let people in. She's sure that they would like Margaret if she would let people meet the real person inside. In the middle of the night, Colonel Potter is furious to find the drunken Dupree riding Sophie. He orders him off, which Dupree listens to by falling off the horse. Potter says he never wants to see Dupree again, ending his chance at a transfer. The next morning, Dupree, hungover, and Lorraine head out, and Margaret asks BJ and Winchester to join her in a cup of coffee in the mess tent. At first surprised, they agree, looking at each other in slight amazement at the change. Later that day, Hawkeye returns, saying he wasn't a hit at the 8063rd, the people there complaining that he was dull. At first, BJ and Winchester pull his leg, suggesting that they're sorry Dupree is gone and that Hawkeye is back, but then the facade ends when Winchester, in a rare moment, gives Hawkeye a joyful hug, happy he's returned. All right, guys, again, we're going to go through this beat by beat, but let me start with you, Clinton. Overall, normally I would ask you, like, what do you think of this episode? And we'll get to all that. But question specific to this episode is, how do you think MASH works without Hawkeye? Because this is the closest we will ever get to what the show might have been like had Alan Alda decided to go do something else after 5.5 seasons. So did you miss him? Did you miss Hawkeye's presence in this episode?
I did, actually. I mean, it works for this episode, but I don't know that we would have gone 5 more seasons if he'd just jumped ship radar style, like, at, you know, halfway through the season.
Mm-hmm. So you think it works because you know he's coming back, as opposed to, oh man, this is the first one. Hawkeye leaves and he's gone after this.
Right. Or worse, you know, if it had been like Trapper John, you just open up the season and he's gone. And it's like, can you imagine that? Yeah, welcome to MASH season 7. By the way, there's no more Hawkeye.
That would have been the last season of MASH, I think, if they had done that. It means I'd be a lot closer to wrapping up MASHcast, actually, at this point.
Oh, so. I get the feeling. Yeah, it would have been one of those, like, well, we had to pull it 5 episodes in. Sorry, folks.
I think so. Scott, what do you think? How do you feel about a Hawkeye-less MASH?
You know, after watching that, I think I watched it, I think, 4 or 5 times to take my notes and, you know, get ready for the episode. You realize, because after the second time, you're like, yeah, Hawkeye's basically not in this the whole time. I thought it was still a good episode. You know, it kind of gave BJ his chance to shine. But after thinking it over, it's a little weird not to have him. But I still enjoyed it. It was good to give. You know, and this is obviously a pretty big Margaret episode. Some great dialogue for her. But yeah, I would agree. If Hawkeye had just disappeared, this show probably would have tanked pretty hard. This probably would have been the final season for sure. So there's just something about Alan Alda that obviously is the glue to MASH. So.
I think it would have been fine if they had done a couple more episodes across the remaining seasons with Hawkeye's presence diminished. You know, I think that would have been fine. I mean, Alan Alda was pretty busy. He was appearing in plays and appearing in movies. I mean, I'm kind of shocked that he didn't take more time off, really, when you think about it. So I would have been fine with it. But yeah, I mean, obviously, if this had been like the, you know, he goes to the 863rd and something happens and he never comes back. It would have been like, oh no, no, no. This would have been the divining point. Like, oh, the show got bad after that temporary duty episode. So yeah, they realize you, as they say, Hawkeye was the first among equals on the show. So, the episode opens at Colonel Potter's office and he is explaining to Hawkeye and Bigelow the whole deal at the 863rd. Is it me or is there a lot of 863rding in this season? There seems to be a lot of stuff. Margaret and Hawkeye go there to do the vascular clamp thing. Like there just seems to be way more interactions with the 863rd this season. For some reason, I don't know why they, you know, they're constantly like trading back and forth. Like, don't we have enough to do? We have to do all this stuff. I mean, Potter even talks about that. It's kind of annoying. And then related to that, as I mentioned in previous episodes, like Bigelow, this is Bigelow season. She gets so much to do, more in this season than in all her seasons combined. And I like it. It's fun. It's, you know, and Margaret gets, it's not because Margaret's not here. Margaret gets a lot to do. This is a big Margaret episode, but I like that Enid Kent gets a lot to do. I think it's really charming. So, they were never going to do this, but it would have been fun to do a part two where you flip it and we find Hawkeye and Bigelow at the 863rd. And that's the episode. That would have been cool.
That would have been great. I'd love to see, you know, it's nice when they go off to, go off to Tokyo sometime, but to see an actual episode at 863rd would have been amazing. Just to see another perspective.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you though, like, you know, if this had been a modern, like done now, what are the odds it would have been at the end of the season, Bigelow gets permanently transferred to the 863rd and then next season you have MASH and MASH 8063.
Streaming on Disney Plus. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely probably would have happened.
You know, it's just an idea.
Yeah,
kind of like the Sherman Potter Chronicles.
Yeah, the Sherman Potter Chronicles. Sure, yeah, why not? I do love. There's this great little gesture by Enid Kent that I think is really very charming. That Hawkeye, of course, spends the whole time, you know, trying to flirt with Bigelow. He's got beyond flirting at this point. He's just being sort of his typical Hawkeye lech sort of thing. But the reason why it sort of works, even though it's, you know, from our modern eyes, very unprofessional, is that Bigelow doesn't take any of it seriously. They know each other very well. And I love that at the end, as they're prepared to leave, she takes Hawkeye's arm. I just think that's so charming. Like, it's like, oh, we're pals. It's okay. I know, Hawkeye, you're being Hawkeye, but none of this is seriously. Nobody's really offended because this is all just sort of silliness. I think it's a very just sort of charming and warm gesture that she does that. And I don't know if that's the kind of thing that the director, Burt Metcalf, puts in. He asks the actor to do it, or that's something that Enid Kent just did, or that was Alan Alda's idea. But I don't know. I just think it's charming.
I agree.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, we all have those coworkers that you can go back and forth with, and you can tell like the dirty joke or whatever, and you both know that it's, you know, there's nothing gonna come of it. You're both the office perverts. I'm looking at you, Rob.
Wow. How dare you, Clint? I am not the Fire and Water Network pervert. Thank you very much. I think we all know who that is. So leave your thought in the comments, everybody, who you think I'm talking about. We then are out on the compound and we see Winchester is adding Boston to the signpost. Now, Boston has been seen on the signpost before, but of course, you know, there's probably just some set deck. This is specifically Winchester adding it. And much like the scene I just mentioned with Bigelow, I think this is a charming detail because this is Winchester finally really accepting that he's at the 477, that he's stuck here, that he's actually kind of participating in one of the camp rituals, which is putting the Boston sign up. So I think that's, again, I think that's a great little detail.
It's an iconic piece of the MASH history. Obviously, the signpost to see him actually would have put on there was cool. It's crazy to see how stark white it is compared to the ones that have all been faded, but
yeah.
Still very cool. Still very cool to see.
That's a great detail. But yeah, the rest of them have all been caked, you know, dirt, rain, mud, the Boston one is brand new and white, you know? So, but yeah, I just think Winchester is so unwilling to be part of the camp in any way, participate in any way, that this is, you know, such a tiny little victory. And I love that BJ is just sitting in a chair watching it like it's a show or something. He's just watching Winchester do this. Like, okay, this is entertaining. So then our guest stars arrive. As I mentioned, it's Captain Roy Dupree and Lorraine Anderson. Dupree is played by George Lindsay, longtime character actor, sitcom actor. He passed away in 2012. His main claim to fame was, of course, as Goober, great name, on the Andy Griffith Show. He also appeared on shows like Chips, Fantasy Island. He was in Cannonball Run 2, so that's exciting. Did either one of you guys ever watch the Andy Griffith Show? I mean, you're both would have been in reruns, like for me, but I don't know. I've never really seen much of Andy Griffith. Are you guys familiar with him at all from that show?
Very. The Andy Griffith Show was pretty much a staple in my household as a child. And yeah, I still watch it from time to time.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
I mean, I've seen the opening scene, obviously, the most, you know, the famous theme song and everything, but I've never really seen an episode. I think it was on occasionally here or there, just on TV as I was passing through, but I've never actually watched a full episode.
Okay. Well, you know, Chris Franklin from our network is a huge fan of the Andy Griffith Show, and he jokes every so often about starting an Andy Griffith Mayberry podcast. So if he ever does, Clinton, you'll have to hit him up on that because wasn't that show on like 20 seasons or something? There's a lot of episodes.
It feels like it. I mean, it kind of depends on if you count the Mayberry RFD spinoff as part of the Andy Griffith Show. Then in that case, yeah, it probably would be about 20 seasons.
Woo! Okay. All right. So, here he's playing Roy Dupree. And I mentioned Lorraine Anderson is played by the actress Marcia Rod. She was in TV shows like Maude, Lou Grant, Night Court. She was in the 1971 film Little Murders by Jules Feiffer. And then she's still working today. She was actually in an episode of Hunters, the Amazon original show with Al Pacino. I watched that show. Maybe this was second season. I didn't see that one, but it's not like I would necessarily recognize her. But yeah, she's still working to this day. So they show up and, you know, they're like, okay, we're here to become the, not the chief surgeon, but the head surgeon here. And he immediately takes a shine to BJ. And then they do this running gag where he can never remember BJ's initials, JB, JD, you know, all this kind of stuff. And that's a whole bit. And then, and he's got all these wonderful Southern aphorisms, you know, well, Tommy do an anthill and smear my ears with jam. It's all stuff. It's all stuff like that. When he's introducing Lorraine, and Winchester arrives and he takes an immediate liking to Lorraine and he starts flirting with her pretty much right out of the gate. I mean, it's like literally the first thing he says, which is fun because again, Winchester hasn't shown much involvement with what goes on at the 477. So I don't know what it is about Lorraine that he likes other than just the physical, because he's literally never heard a word out of her mouth, but he doesn't waste any time.
Yeah, I say this is one of those few times we see even all the seasons where he, you know, he never lays it on this thick, it seems like. But, you know, it's, yeah, like I said, she hasn't even said a word yet, and he's already over there introducing himself, and it's kind of fun to see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't Charles is definitely smooth in this episode.
Always have to be Hawkeye.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice. So then Lorraine busts into the lab. And she pushes the door open, trying to surprise Margaret. And of course, Margaret, being classic Margaret, is like, "You idiot!" You know, because she gets hit by the door. And then when she realizes, "Oh, it's Lorraine. It's her great friend." Okay. And then so they start talking about all that. And she mentions that she's been at the 863rd for a month. And they sit down and start chatting. And they immediately start reminiscing. And Lorraine tells the story about the time that she melted down, her and Margaret melted down all of her father's medals to make earrings for them. I don't know. I think if I was him, I'd be pretty mad too. That seems like a pretty bad thing. I would imagine if you got medals for bravery or whatever, I'd be pretty pissed if you lost them because you have such a bratty daughter. I'm like, woo, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't just give those things out. So I'm assuming he worked pretty hard to get them. I got some wounds to get them. So yeah, I'd be pretty irate myself.
Jeez. Oh my God. So they talk a little bit. By the way, most of the scene for me was cut in syndication, right? Where she asks Margaret, "How's the marriage? How's it like being married?" And she says, "Not so good." That's where they cut it. So, and then they go to the next scene. But here we have this whole little conversation, and she says it's hard to squeeze a marriage between a little telephone wire, and you know, they did this heart to heart, and but then she's like, well, all right, let's put aside that for the moment, let's just have fun while we're here. Again, it's really, it's, you know, it's charming. It's charming to see Margaret be happy for once and be smiling and things like that. And then we go back to the swamp, and Dupree is getting the lay of the land, and he immediately takes a swig of the before he does that, he meets Winchester and he calls him Chuck Wagon. And I love, he says, Roy Dupree from the 063C. And before he finishes his bit, Winchester's like, yeah, I know it rhymes. And then I love where he goes, let me be brutally candid. I find your sense of humor mawkish and your personality boorish, to say the least. I don't know about you guys. I wish I had the ability to do that occasionally. Once in a while, just like, let's cut the BS. This is not going to work. Let's just move on. But of course, I think most of us just put up with it.
Yeah. You usually have to be pretty polite out in public, but if you could have that ability to just say bluntly what you thought of someone and move on with the day, that would be nice many times throughout our lives.
I think I tried that once, and the person quit the next day. So the boss told me to stop talking to people.
Wow.
It worked out for both of us.
Yeah. Holy geez, Clinton. My God. So you told him dirty jokes, didn't you? You thought he was one of those people, and then you realized,
that's what I get for hanging around Firewire Network. And
don't blame us now. So, and then of course Dupree is not even insulted. He's like, well, I still like you. And he smacks Winchester in the back, and Winchester's like, good God, he means it. And so it actually hasn't worked. Dupree takes a swig of the martini, and he says, why don't you put a little whiskey in this punch? And then he says, down home, my mama would sprinkle some of this stuff on her ironing board. And I'll admit, I am not a big fan of kind of like corn pone humor. This is not my style, but I admit I do kind of like Goober here. I keep calling him Goober. He's not Goober. I keep calling him Dupree. I like that he is so dismissive of this thing about, sprinkle it on her ironing board. That's just such a wonderful visual. And then when he talks about what school he's been to, and he says to Winchester, you look like a Yale man. And Winchester, of course, is insulted at that. So I would not want to see Dupree on this show for longer than one episode, but I actually find George Lindsay pretty charming here.
Yeah, definitely a good change of pace to have some of that kind of humor on here. Like I said, it's good in small amounts, maybe not multiple episodes or a full season, but definitely for this episode, it brought a lot of humor to it.
He refers to the, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Glenn.
Oh, I was just going to say, believe it or not, I'm sure there was a reason I was on this episode. There are people who do say things pretty much like that around here sometimes.
It is kind of ironic when you think about that, famously, Fred Silverman, the president of CBS, when he took over CBS, he looked at their lineup and he saw that it was, I'm not sure if Mayberry RFD was part of that engine, but like Green Acres, the Beverly Hillbillies, Petticoat Junction, those were the shows on CBS. And he wanted to appeal to a more urban, in his mind, sophisticated, upscale market. And he canceled all those shows, even though most of them were really quite popular. Nowadays, that would be completely unheard of. But he did that, and that paved the way for the Mary Tyler Moore Show and All in the Family and the Bob Newhart Show and MASH. So it's like, this is, and the, of course, as we mentioned, George Lindsay was on Andy Griffith. So this is exactly the kind of humor that got cleared out so MASH could get on the schedule. And so we're kind of seeing, like, if MASH had maybe taken a different direction or had different creators behind it, this is kind of what it'd be like. You could imagine this might be the kind of character. I mean, he's not terribly dissimilar from Duke Forrest, from Tom Skerritt's character in the movie, who was a Southerner and kind of had this contrast against Hawkeye. But have you guys seen the movie, Clinton?
I still have not seen it, no.
Hmm. Scott?
Yeah, I've not seen it either.
Really? Wow. Okay. You guys should both check it out. It's a superb movie. It really is. It does feel like an alternate universe MASH, because it's everybody different actors and stuff, except for Gary Berghoff, of course. But yeah, there is a, you know, initially when Larry Gelbart was tapped to do the MASH show, he realized that having three leads was too much. And so he decided to cut one of the doctors, and it was Duke Forrest that he cut, which is why there was no Duke Forrest in the show, even though he was a main character in the movie. But so you get a touch of that here. So then later, Dupree is checking out the still, and he's like, oh, your engineering's all wrong. That's why this stuff has the kick of a 90-year-old chorus girl. Again, he's got some marvelous phrases here. And then as he's trying to improve it, he breaks it. And Winchester finds that all very funny. And I think we all can maybe relate to that a little, where you're like the new guy somewhere and you're maybe trying to impress and you try a little too hard. You know, it's that kind of thing where you're like, oh yeah, I'm trying to make friends here. And you're maybe just working on it a little too hard. And BJ, of course, a very patient guy, is desperately trying to, be patient about it. He's trying to be as nice as possible. It's hard. And then, they hear, choppers arrive, and Dupree has this great line where he says, wow, it rains here too. And I love that. I love that phrase. It's such a great, like, okay, yeah, he's a competent doctor. He obviously knows what he's doing in the intersection. And I love that he's got his own little phrase for it. I think that's really quite charming. So then we're in, the operating room, and we see that Dupree knows what he's doing. He's not dissimilar from Hawkeye in that he kind of is maybe a little bit of a risk taker. He jumps in on Colonel Potter's operation, and Potter's like, this is no time to practice slip knots, Captain. But then he wins him over. He wins him over because he shows that he might be, again, kind of a cornpone or whatever, but he's actually quite sophisticated and he knows what he's doing, to the point that even Potter is impressed. And then at the same time, we've got Winchester hitting on Lorraine. Again, he's doing the full court press. He even asks her, what are you doing after the operation? So, man, yeah, he is all in, man. I mean, woo.
Yeah, he's definitely pushing all his chips to the middle on this one. I mean, especially right in front of everybody. But I guess they could see him earlier, you know, put the full court press on too. But that was a good move by him, I think.
It's kind of comes with that confidence, is to know that you feel like you can do that. I've not gone through life with that kind of confidence.
Oh, that we can all be Charles Winchester.
And so Lorraine flirts back with Winchester, and Margaret gets very offended, and she's talking about that, like, we're not here to do this. And then she says, Captain Anderson, I want you to see me after surgery. And so she's being super Margaret Houlihan-y, and Dupree shows up in the scrub room, and he's trying to compliment Margaret, and he says, you know, I like a girl with spirit. And she says, why don't you go sit on a steer's horn? And he's like, I like a girl with spunk. Go sit on a steer's horn. Maybe not that much spunk. He's a little upset about that.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the best lines from a comedic standpoint in this episode, for sure, when he did that.
We joke about here at K2HQ, as we call it, that all the women in my life are high-spirited women, whether it's my sister, my wife, my dog, my mother-in-law. They are all these kinds of women. They do not suffer fools gladly. And my wife likes to say that's because, you know, I'm capable of handling women like that in my life. And I guess that must be because I seem to be born to them and attract them. So it's kind of the way it is. I would find Margaret to be intimidating, but Lorraine, I actually like Lorraine. Lorraine seems to have, you know, again, all the skills that Margaret has necessarily, but she's just as we'll see, she's just a lot looser about it. And just, she hasn't let it all sort of consume her. And so that's that's our act break. And then we come back into the mess tent, and Lorraine is telling stories about Margaret, and Margaret is sitting there stone faced and is not interested in it all. And I love the fact that Mulcahy is part of this. I just find that really charming that he's, not that he's now a part of the gang, but I love that he wants to hear, they're talking about their bras, they're stuffing their bras, and they cheated on a test. I like that Winchester's Winchester, Mulcahy, he's up for these slightly off-color stories.
He wants to get on the gossip, you know? Tired of hearing those confessions, wants to hear the good stuff.
I'm sure he has something to tell his sister now.
So but the Lorraine is not picking up on this at all, and she can't tell that Margaret is not interested. And so finally Margaret actually storms off, and I'm saying, okay, something's really wrong here. We get a brief appearance by Klinger. It's basically his only appearance in the show, where Dupree gets in line and Klinger is serving food. I don't know what food he is serving, but it is really nasty. It's like this big gray slop, and it's dripping onto the tray as it's handling him. It's just absolutely, you know, nasty. And despite all that, Dupree likes the food. He says, this is prime A1 chow. If you really want to choke on your cud, try eating at the 863rd. Boy, that is bad. And they're kind of like, what poor Hawkeye must be dealing with if he thinks the 477th food is good. So, that is not good. And then Dupree tells a story that's, again, a little off color, but it's a little more off color than even Mulcahy can deal with. And he sort of embarrasses Father Mulcahy, who leaves, and Dupree feels bad about it. But then he flags down Colonel Potter, and he says, I really love being here. The chow is great. The nurses are great. I love that Potter immediately is hip to it. He's like, are you going somewhere, or are you just grazing? I love that Potter is totally hip to this. And he says, I wonder if you could use another hired hand around here. And Potter's like, why not? I like your style. Now, can he do that? I don't understand. I don't understand how he can just, like, why not ask for another doctor all this time? I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, I would think you'd have to go to the commander at 863. Can he just take his doctor? Is Hawkeye not coming back? Is he just going to get an extra one? I mean, it's all seems pretty sudden there, and just agree so quickly while just eating. So,
it's like, yeah, I'm sure, both CEOs would have to sign off on it. They'd probably have to trade, something like this. So, goodbye, BJ. It was nice knowing.
It's just so funny to me that Potter's like, yeah, I'll look into it. I'm like, wait, can you do that? I don't understand. That's very, very strange. So later on, and BJ and Winchester are commiserating with each other. And Winchester says it would be like having Dupree here full time would be living in a prairie purgatory. And again, I've said in previous episodes, I like it when Winchester is part of the gang. And so I love that it's the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing, where they both can't stand Dupree. And so in this moment, they can be chums. I just think that's really charming. And Dupree is drunk. And then, of course, they come up with the idea of whose turn is it to walk Sophie? And Dupree's like, Sophie, what, and who's that? And is she pretty? And then BJ says, about 6'8", hairy legs, longest nose you've ever seen. And Dupree goes, the guy in the dress. Great callback. So then they mention that he's sort of the camp mascot. Do you ride? And he says, oh, and of course they know that he rides. I mean, how could he, guy wears a cowboy hat. How can he not ride? Have either of you guys ever rode a horse, Scott?
I have not. Never. I mean, I've been around them, obviously, but never just in close proximity, but never actually ridden one. So,
Clinton, you out there in Oklahoma, have you ever ridden a horse?
Yeah, I've ridden a horse a few times. I'm not very good at it.
Okay. So, was it like a kid thing, or do you do it as an adult?
As a kid, yeah. My uncle had a horse.
Oh, did he really? Mm-hmm. Did he have like his own? Did he stable it somewhere, or did he have at his own house?
At his house, yeah. He had a field, a barn, all that.
Wow. Yeah, I have never done that. I think horses are beautiful animals, like just beautiful and majestic and stately, but I'm also a little terrified of them because they're so huge. You know, I think I need animals to be a little small, like dogs and cats is like more my speed. But of course,
don't ride your dog, Rob.
No, I will not ride my dog. Yeah. No. they set this up. They realize that, and Dupree obviously is too drunk to really even think about it. And they set all this up. They know what's coming here. And so then we meet up with Lorraine, and she is coming back to Margaret's tent. And they've actually gotten along so poorly that she has packed her stuff, and she's going to go presumably bunk with the nurses, which is pretty rough. You know, she's here with her, like, one of her best friends, and yet they're not going to talk to each other. And they get into this argument, and, you know, Margaret says, well, you know, I don't act undignified, childish and silly. And Lorraine is like, it's okay to have fun. And she says, I'm a head nurse. I've got responsibilities. A lot of people depend on me. And then Lorraine's like, do you hear yourself? You sound like those crusty old nurses that we used to make fun of in medical school. And they have this heart to heart. And it leads to what I think is a really interesting scene where Margaret tells essentially her origin story. And she says, one night I was at a party drinking and dancing. And the next morning I was in a war in charge of 10 nurses and the party was over. And we really, for all the characters that were on MASH when the show started, we never really got their origin stories. There would be the occasional mention, like Frank Burns talked about it. Henry had a line here and there, but generally everyone is just at the 477th when the show starts. And I love this. I love that we get a little glimpse. I mean, MASH didn't do flashbacks, but I love that we got this little instance of what Margaret's life was like, that she was kind of a party girl. I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but she was a hard partier, obviously. And then, bang, she's put in charge of 10 nurses in a war zone. And I just think it's a great detail that we can conjure for ourselves what Margaret's life was like. And you can imagine what a drastic change that would be and why Margaret might just have just hardened and stayed that way. So I think that's just a terrific little bit of dialogue from her.
Oh, totally agree. I say this is one of those episodes where, even though I've seen it so many times, I guess I didn't remember this portion of dialogue. I mean, this is, to me, one of the bigger Margaret pieces here, where you get that backstory, kind of explains, you know, her, you know, she's going to go more into, obviously, her marriage with Donald. It's a pretty good 2 or 3 minutes there, where you learn more than you may have in the first 5 seasons, just in that short little conversation with a lifelong friend, I guess you could say.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with Scott. When I think back on this episode, like, I think Dupree, I think Lorraine, I don't think about this being like a big, heavy Margaret episode.
Yeah, I know. I think it's got the only other example I can think of actually is on After MASH, which, you know, nobody saw, but they actually do a flashback in one episode of Klinger in basic training and how he tried to get out of it and stuff. And there's a brief scene there. And again, one of the stylistic differences that After MASH would take on MASH, but that's about it. You know, so yeah, I just think it's just very evocative in the way Loretta Swit delivers it, I think is absolutely terrific. And, you know, and then she talks about her marriage again, and she says, I think of him as like a little toy soldier. And then Lorraine's like, you know, she says, I have no friends here. And Lorraine is like, sure you do. You have the whole camp of people out there who will be your friends if you just let them in. I like it. It's a great scene, but it feels like, considering some of the conversations she's had so far, this episode might have worked a little better earlier in the season.
It was kind of surprising when you hear her say she has no, I mean, you think after the, you know, like, I know it's been 5 seasons, but in real time, I guess in Korea, you mean she's been with those people for so long that she doesn't value any of them as a friend currently. I thought that was a pretty, not stunning line, but I was just kind of surprised to hear it. But yeah, this is, it almost makes you think, you know, what if they would have done this same thing for Frank? You know, let these guys spread their wings to some degree and hear some of this backstory and so on and so forth. It's just, all the what have could been with MASH if, you know, it went in different directions over the years.
Yeah, you think about some of the things that have happened, especially like between Margaret and Hawkeye in the last couple seasons, and that there's not a level of friendship there. I mean, you know, at the very least, Hawkeye's the one that she came to when she thought she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, not to mention, you know, having her appendix out or the certain things that happened when they were alone, you know, I'm pretty sure you could at least, you know, put him somewhere under the friend column.
Yeah. Yeah. This feels like something that would have worked just that, again, not to be too harsh on it, but just maybe earlier on in the season that it, you know, right. I mean, to say, as you said, Scott, it's sort of startling to hear, say, I have no friends here. Like, wow. Really? I mean, you know, I mean, God, she confides in Hawkeye and BJ about her bad honeymoon on the very first episode of the season.
And I know later, you know, I mean, maybe it's not at this season yet, but I mean, I feel like her and Colonel Potter become so close. And maybe that may be later down the road, but I mean, yeah, that was, I truly was a little surprised when I heard it. Again, I hadn't watched this episode in much detail that I didn't for this episode, but that was, again, just something where, again, just that portion. Radar, Klinger, I know they were under her all these years as a major, but still, she's had some competition with pretty much everybody. But yeah, if anybody, Hawkeye, like we were just talking, you know, she's done so much with him and provided so much over the seasons and the years there in Korea. You think he would be at least on top of the list, if anything.
She might also just be lashing out a little. She's upset. She's kind of a little cornered by Lorraine, you know, because Lorraine is kind of making so much sense that she might just be feeling a little like, oh, I don't have any friends. Like the kind of thing that you just sort of spit out and you don't really mean it. I don't have any friends here. Well, no, that, all right. Okay. That isn't really true. You know?
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah. So then we're out on the compound and we see that Dupree is riding Sophie. If you'll notice in the scene in the swamp, when he is, you know, learns of Sophie, he has his pants on, but when he's riding Sophie, he is in his underwear. So at some point he actually took his pants off to ride the horse.
I went to college with that guy. Honest story. I went to college with that guy.
A guy who just thought taking his pants off was like inherently funny.
No, like the further he got into his bottle of beer, the further his pants, you know, found their way off his legs.
Okay, fair enough. So he's riding around, and of course everyone is woken up. At one point he stops Sophie, he falls off. In the background we see Nurse Kelly just laughing uncontrollably at him, which I think is a great detail. She has a marvelous smile. So you see her, like her shoulders are vibrating up and down, like she's laughing. He falls off. And of course, Colonel Potter is about as mad as he ever could be. And he says, Dupree, I don't ever want to see you around this horse or my camp again. In fact, this war ain't big enough for the two of us. And I love the way Harry Morgan delivers. He goes, this war is it big enough for the two? It's so mad. And then he softens up when he turns to Sophie and he goes, come on, Soph, you could step on his hat if you want to, which is sweet. He's so sweet with Sophie. I absolutely love that. And of course, Dupree is too drunk to like sort of figure out that he's been had, because of course, anyone else would say, wait a minute. These two told me it was okay. You know what I mean? But he doesn't, because he's drunk, he doesn't really think that, because he's like, did I do something wrong? And of course they're like, no, 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 you were perfect. And so, yeah, he doesn't figure that out. But that's, again, it's because he's like Clinton's friend in college. He's just hammered.
Exactly.
So we then cut to the next morning and everyone's getting ready to leave. Lorraine and Margaret have a nice heart to heart, and they say they love you. They say I love you to each other. She will never be seen again. This her supposedly great friend that will never return to the show, unfortunately. But you know, that's I guess what happens in a war. Dupree is hungover, and he says, "How am I supposed to know it was the colonel's horse?" They lead him out. They drop him in the jeep. Lorraine is going to drive. Winchester, of course, realizing he sort of missed his opportunity, sort of tries to hit on her again. He says, I have an old bottle of Beaujolais for a special occasion. Maybe we could share it to wish you a bon voyage. I love that. Like, what? They're going to go on a date right now? Like, she's getting ready to leave. Like, you missed your chance, Charles.
Yeah, one last try. But it's you run out of time pretty dang quick.
And then she says, you're one of a kind. He's like, yes, thank you. And he's not really sure how to take all that exactly. And so she's actually probably would have been a good match for him, because she's not intimidated by his wit or by his sort of way he puts on airs. And so they might have been, she would have been a good fit for Charles. But again, of course, we never realize she will never be seen again. And she says, all right, I'm going to drive. And she says, goodbye. She says, see you, Margaret, see you soon, Margaret, which is, again, I like that little detail that, okay, they've made plans to get together again. Winchester lets out a yahoo. It's through. which Margaret and BJ find very charming. They go walk off, and Margaret is like, where are you going? I love BJ. He's like, who are you talking to? The two of you. Where are you going? And he says, I got to read a letter. And Winchester says, I'm going to enjoy, revel in the quiet. And then she says, I'll buy you a cup of coffee in the mess. How about a cup of coffee in the mess that I'm buying? They look a little stunned, but they're like, okay. And she walks in between the two of them. And I love that she starts to talk. I thought maybe we could talk. BJ and Winchester exchange this little glance with each other. Kind of like, do you see what's going on here? And like, well, yeah, all right. And then they head into the mess tent. And it's a nice, sweet little way to end the main part of the episode.
Yeah, a whole new Margaret as they walk off there. But it's kind of, a fun little exchange or thing, because you can tell they're obviously very, very surprised to hear her asked to go even do that. So,
yeah, it's sweet. It's really sweet. And so then we come back, and it's now night again. Hawkeye is back, and BJ and Winchester are sharing, playing chess, and they're drinking wine, although Winchester's drinking it out of a martini glass. And Hawkeye says, I was dull. Doctors, nurses, they hated me. Everybody kept telling me I was dull, saying you guys got the better deal. And I don't know whether BJ and Winchester road tested this before Hawkeye got back, but they're both perfectly in sync about, yeah, the guy was great. Yeah, sorry, no offense. And then BJ says, we're kind of sorry you're back, which you see the smile cross Hawkeye's face because he knows, okay, I've been had. And then Winchester says, I never thought that they would come to admit this, but God, I missed you. And he hugs BJ, he hugs Hawkeye, and Hawkeye then hugs the two of them, and they knock them over, and that's the end of the episode. And it's good, a great, warm way to end the show. And it's, maybe if you're CBS, you're like, God, we missed Hawkeye. So thank God he's back, everybody. So,
I just want to know, like, what kind of drunken frat boys are up at the 8063rd that they prefer Dupree over Hawkeye?
It's all guys you went to college with. I think that's...
That explains a lot, Rock.
By the way, I forgot to mention this at the top of the show. When Colonel Potter is giving them the brief up at the 8063rd, he says, the colonel of the CEO of the 8063rd is a guy named Wheatley. And I haven't been tracking this in my notes, but it's just off the top of my head. I think every single time that we see a member of the 8063rd, it is never the same character. They always have a different CO. There's different doctors. The turnover at 8063rd must be insane because it's never the same people. Meanwhile, Hawkeye's been at 477 for 11 straight years.
They're all dying of alcohol poisoning, I'm sure.
Yeah. I think I did some initial research on IMDb before the episode. I was trying to do my notes and stuff like that. And I think that was actually one of the notes that someone put the colonel, whoever's running it, keeps changing every time. They say, two seasons ago he mentions the same thing, and it's a completely different person. Yeah, but he knows them both. So,
they never bothered. So yeah, they are just constantly cannot keep anybody there. Meanwhile, at MASH, it's like, oh, you're here for the. You're here for the duration, everybody. we'll send Hawkeye home, and we'll send a Trapper home, or whatever. But generally, you guys are all stuck here for the entire run of the war. Meanwhile, it's like a revolving door at the 863rd for people. So, all right. Overall thoughts about this episode, Scott? Let me start with you. I mean, how do you feel about? Do you think it's a solid episode of Temporary Duty?
I do. Like I said, especially when I went back, like I said, and not to go back on, but the Margaret portion was, I think those couple minutes there, there's some great information there. It was fun to see Roy Dupree, 8063. It was fun to see that portion. But overall, I thought it was a really good episode. And like I said, this season, as you listen to this season on the podcast and just watch it again, you realize, even for the first season with Charles, this is they've got some really good episodes. And they're going to keep just piling on top of that for the next, 5 years or so. So,
yeah, same. It's a solid episode. I'm glad we didn't do this format, every season, but it would have been nice, do it one, two more times tops. Yeah. Overall, it's pretty solid. Dupree and Potter hit it off because they probably live within 6 to 8 hours driving time of each other, back home. Margaret and Lorraine have a pass, so I mean that's always nice. Yeah, good, yeah. Solid episode.
Yeah, I hope in my MASH fanfic in my head, I hope that Margaret and Lorraine kept getting together and, you know,
and melting metals. Yes,
melting dad, their dad, their father's metals. That would not work for Howitzer Al Houlihan. I think we know that from later on in the series. So, all right, guys. Well, Clint, let me do reverse. Let me start with you. Do you have a favorite line or joke from the episode?
Well, you mentioned my favorite one earlier about Sophie stepping on the hat, which after Potter mentions it, you look and, you know, Dupree's hat is indeed smashed. But since that one was already brought up, I'll go with my second favorite, where they're in the operating room and Dupree says, boy, that's more fun than skinny dipping with the Pittman sisters.
he has wonderful down home aphorisms, to be sure. Scott, what about
family friendly show?
Yeah, exactly.
For my favorite one, usually it'd be a humor one, but for this one, my favorite line was actually when Margaret was talking to her friend, and mine is actually that he's more like a toy soldier I play with sometimes, about Donald. It kind of sums up, you know, after we watched all this for the last season or two, kind of what that will end up becoming, and what it really meant to her long term. But I just thought there was some great, great dialogue in there. I mean, I love the one about sitting on a horn and stuff like that too. But I thought that was just a great, great line about, you know, Margaret's marriage and as a whole. So,
yeah, I think that's a terrific line. And what we know about Margaret and how she sees Penobscot, like we realize that she probably didn't know him very well before they decided to get together. And so he represented all of these sort of iconic things. And now she's seeing it like, oh, he's not, I didn't really see the real person. And now she's seeing it like, oh, he's like a little toy that I wind up and he's just kind of an army man. And so, yeah, it's a great, this is a really great Margaret episode. And it's interesting that Alan Alda is not in it at all. And he didn't write it. He didn't direct it. Like, he's basically off this week. So I've got to wonder if he was off doing something else or just took the week off. I mean, once in a while, I mean, God, he's the only character that's in every episode. So at least he, I guess he deserves, you know, to take a week off, go on vacation with the family, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
To have a good time.
I think at the time of this show, I mean, how popular, I mean, if you could equate him to today, I mean, how popular would Alan Alda be from a TV? I mean, he had to be the most famous TV actor there was at that point, or one of them. So the offers, and like I said, doing plays, doing movies, for him to commit to the full 11 seasons was pretty amazing. Thank goodness for us as fans, but I'm sure he could have gone anywhere and done anything he wanted to for those 10 years that MASH was on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right. Nobody, I mean, think about the average MASH episode at this point was probably watched by 30 million people. I mean, good Lord, the Super Bowl doesn't get 30 million people anymore. You know, it's just kind of amazing. My favorite joke is, and I touched on it a little bit briefly, is when Dupree meets Winchester and he's like, you bet you went to Yale. And I love that Winchester forgets himself and he's like, Harvard. And then he's like, oh, he quite sadly realizes he's reveals an insecurity about that. He's so offended that it's been intimated that he went to Yale, as if Yale is some scrub school. I mean, I know if you went to Harvard, there's kind of like a spy versus spy mentality there, but I love that he's just so offended at the very notion that he went anywhere other than Harvard. And that must have been a thing in a culture even then, that like, if you, I've heard it said by people that like, if you went to Harvard, if someone went to Harvard, they'll let you know within 5 minutes of meeting them that they went to Harvard. So that must have been a thing, you know, that was a, I remember I worked at, when I worked at a bookstore, there was actually not dissimilar to Winchester, how he talks to Lorraine here. There was a guy that came in and tried to flirt with one of the employees. And literally, I think the third thing out of his mouth was, oh, I went to Harvard. It's just, the woman was like, okay, I got to go in the back now. I was just like, wow, he had that right out there. It was the third thing. It was like his name. What books he likes. And oh, I went to Harvard. Like, wow, okay, all right. So that is the thing. So yeah, I think this is a very funny episode for David Duncan Steyer. So that is Temporary Duty. Again, a slightly experimental episode for MASH to not have Hawkeye in it at all. It's kind of the reverse of the Hawkeye episode from season 4, where it's all Hawkeye. Now we have no Hawkeye. So Scott, Clinton, thank you both for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for
appreciate the
me.
Opportunity.
Yeah. Absolutely. Clinton, why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Oh, gosh. People that are actually wanting to find more of me, I'm curious why, because, you know, I'm not quite so cultured as I come across on this show. But I do a little podcast called Coffee and Comics, where I look at a random comic in the span of time it takes more or less to have a little coffee break. And I also do another show called Fan Film Fridays over on the Longbox Crusade Network feed, where I look at an online fan film with a guest, and we just kind of chit-chat about it for 30, 45 minutes or so.
I wonder, are there any MASH fan films that we know? Right, there are, right? Right? Have they ever done one of those?
That is honestly something I have not checked, but you have given me a quest.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have to look in on about that.
I'd be interested in that too myself. So yeah, if anybody finds it, let us know.
Absolutely. Scott, what about you?
You can find me usually, I guess, on X now, or Twitter, Chiefs Mash.
I'm not calling it that.
No, I woke up, what was it, 2 days ago, and I was like, why is there a big X on my screen? And I realized what this was. But no, it's at Chiefs_Mash85 or Chiefs Mash Forever. I'm always on there. Big KSC Chiefs fan. I live in Nebraska. And then just Mash all the time. So again, anytime anybody wants to chat about Mash, I'm always game. Those are where you can find me.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you both for coming on. I really appreciate it. And of course, thank you all for listening. You can find the show on Twitter, not X, at MASH477cast. Yep. I'm just not calling it that. I don't care. You can find all the back episodes on our website, finewaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show in any podcatcher of your choice. And if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big salute to Daniel Ulrich, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Mike Thomas, Joe Perino, Billy Shulman, Dennis Bailey, Kara Kay, Tim English, Adam Ackerman, Lisa P., Laura Braun, Stefan Van Skyke, Michael Kelly, Darrell Clark, and Brady Palmer. Thanks, everybody, for the support. I really appreciate it. So we will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
Pierce, good luck, and watch out for Colonel Wheatley. Bigelow, good luck, and watch out for Captain Pierce.